Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folks must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Come out.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I saw coming along. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. Get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
I want to take a look at Black Wall Street, and if any event can be linked to reparations and have a realistic shot of getting paid reparations, or whatever form reparations you think reparations needs to take form in, it would be, in my opinion, Black Wall Street, what happened in Tulsa. And then once again, reparations can take form in many different ways. So it necessarily it depends on how you go about it, might increase your chances. So anyway, Black Wall Street reparations paradigm shift, 619-768-2945. Now I'm restricting this just towards the Tulsa race riots, or what they call the Tulsa race riots, that happened in 1921. There is a, well, let me start off with one person. I don't know if she's still alive. Hopefully she is. But let me see. I got to get the date on this. All right, let me read this. One of the last survivors of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre, 107 years old, wants justice. Now, Viola Fletcher, who lived through the Tulsa race massacre a century ago, testified before Congress on May 19th. Well, this was last year, though, so I don't know if she's still with us, about a push for reparations. Now, in my opinion, let me read a little bit more. She had just turned 7 years old when a white mob descended on her all-black neighborhood in a murderous rage. Miss Fletcher says, "I'm a survivor of the Tulsa race massacre." Viola Fletcher, 107 years old last year, if she's still around, she'll be 108 years old right now, told members of the House Judiciary Subcommittee Wednesday, "2 weeks ago I celebrated my 107th birthday. Today I'm visiting Washington, D.C. for the first time in my life. I'm here seeking justice and asking my country to acknowledge what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. Fletcher's 100-year-old brother, Hughes, also known as Uncle Red Van Ellis, and a third survivor, 106-year-old Leslie Benningfield Randall, appeared before the subcommittee to push for reparations from one of the worst episodes of racial violence in the United States history. Now, in my opinion, if anybody, black, Ados, whatever you want to call it, in the United States, if anybody legally, morally, and ethically deserve reparations, it'll be one of those three people I just named. I think they were in the wrong place, Washington, D.C., because that's more on a federal level. For the sake of this podcast, this conversation today, if we have a conversation, I think those three are entitled to some type of, and they had to go about it the right way legally, too. Let me put that in there. And for what they want, reparations, it needs to be restricted, in my opinion, to the state of Oklahoma, more appropriately, the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma, if at all. Because there's a couple of ways you can take this. All right. When the Tulsa race riots happened, the way I'm looking at it, it's a civil suit. It's a civil suit where they would need to identify people who actually, if their house was raided, because a lot of houses were raided before they raised the block, if her house was raided, if one, because she was only 7 years old at the time, if one of her parents was injured or maimed, if they lost a house due to this, it's a civil suit. You would have to identify, and you know what, then we're dealing with the statute of limitations too. You would have to identify the people who did that. That's on the civil side of things. Now, if you were to go to the government, we're looking at that time, the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I don't even know if they had a state police in Oklahoma at that time, but the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma, okay, was the mayor's, I mean, was City Hall. Can we place any liability upon City Hall in Tulsa, Oklahoma? Is it the duty and obligation of City Hall, of the city, the local city government, in 1921 as well as right now in 2022, is it the responsibility of local government to protect private citizens? That's one issue, legal issue, if at all. The police department or the sheriff's department or whatever they had there, was it the legal obligation of the sheriff's department or police department or police chief, was it, did they had a legal duty to protect these people? And Washington, D.C., where Viola Fletcher was, that's on, she was talking to federal legislators. This was a local event that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You got your local government, you got your state government, you got your county government, and you got your state government. I know about the Tulsa race riot. The state of Oklahoma had nothing to do with it. So let's go down to the county. At that time, was there a county set up with law enforcement that had a duty and obligation to the public, the people of that 40-acre stretch called Black Wall Street? And then we go to the local level. Was City Hall, the mayor, the city council, the municipality of Tulsa, Oklahoma, were they duty bound to protect all citizens, including the Black Wall Street residents? Is there a legal obligation for that? Okay. Now, we know, like in the George Floyd case, that was the easy one. City employees, you know, confined George Floyd, one of which was on his neck, and he died. The city of, Minneapolis, I guess, Minnesota, that's the easy one. City employees, George Floyd, private citizen. Okay. Now, however, the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma, unless you guys got some kind of evidence I don't know about, did the police chief, did the police department, I mean, any members of the police department or city hall, any type of government local agency at that time, did they in fact start, initiate, and or participate in the Tulsa race riot? If you have proof of that, 619-768-2945. Now, hopefully some of you can answer some of these questions. Now, if guilt is found upon the city or whatever entity that guilt is found, and let's say reparations is settled in the way of a check for whatever amount you want it to be. $1 million, $30 million, $100 million, whatever. Okay. Who is entitled to that? Now, I'm saying it's a no-brainer. Viola Fletcher, her brother, and one other person that I named, hopefully they all still live because they were like 107 years old, 100 years old last year, and with 108 or something like that. And another year has gone by, so hopefully they're still with us. To me, in my opinion, those three, no-brainer, they were there. They were there. They were injured. Their families were injured. Their community was injured. However, somebody that was born on January 1st, 2022, doesn't deserve a penny. Somebody that was born at any time, anybody that was not involved with that at all, who was not there, like Viola Fletcher, her brother, and one other person, and is still living, don't deserve a nickel. These three people were actually there. So the Ados crowd in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in my book, you don't get shit. You weren't there. But Viola Fletcher was there. We're talking about reparations specifically for Tulsa race riots. Should descendants get a payday or whatever you might call reparations? Or the way I'm going is, let me name the people. Because they were actually there. Okay. Viola Fletcher, she deserves, if anybody deserves reparations, as far as the Tulsa race riots only, it's Viola Davis, her 100-year-old brother, and he'll be 101 right now if he's still living, Hughes. All right, also known as Uncle Red Van Ellis. And the third person, 106-year-old, she'll be 107 years old right now, she's still with us, Leslie Benningfield Randall. That's it, 1, 2, 3. Those three people were actually there. The black Ados, who was born on January 1st of 2022, or the black Ados that was born today at 12:01 midnight on May 16, 2022, doesn't deserve jack. This is just LA speak. If you weren't there, but, you know, that's me. That's my thinking. That's my thing. We're not all alike, so 619-768-2945, and we like to get your take on that. And we're going to take a quick interlude, and we'll be back to the phone lines. Black Wall Street reparations. And we're speaking for the people, we're speaking specifically, if you lived in California, or you never had any, if you never had any relatives, or you yourself never lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma, okay, we're not talking to you. We're talking about that people that that live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or was connected to somebody who lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or actually lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. We'll be back in two.
What?
Like that.
Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you didn't. Hey, Jay! Hey! Jay! 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 Come back here! Jay! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk. Jay! I need my money! Jay! Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jay! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me. Shit, I don't fuck. I'm winning anyway. I'm winning. I'm winning any motherfucking way. I can't lose. Shit, you can shoot me, but you can't kill me. Ah. Shit. Oh, what a day. What a motherfucking day.
How it go? We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
We'll be out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
be. He was a man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
All right, today we're going to start off with, just go with whatever you guys want to talk about. Black Wall Street reparations, and that, this is specific for the Tulsa race riots only. This is not a slavery type thing for the United States, but we're talking about reparations for people connected to Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And let's see. Over the weekend, I believe there were 10 people that were shot and killed in Buffalo, New York. And according to the governor of, New York, and I think the mayor of New York, that the and they've caught the shooter. The shootings were allegedly race motivated, if that's the right term to use. So what are your thoughts on that? And then black businesses destroyed by rioters. I'm reading here just real quick. Riots and looting undercut the economic foundation of urban and minority communities. And I do remember when Martin Luther King was assassinated, they had riots on 14th Street, which was a major hub for black businesses back then. And Jewish ones, too. 14th Street Northwest area. What else? H Street Northeast, which was a major hub for black entrepreneurs and their businesses. It's not like that anymore. So anyway, black businesses and black rioters, or black businesses that destroy black, black businesses destroyed by black rioters. All right, that we had that in the trending. The spree shooting, the mass shooting, whatever you want to call it, in Buffalo, New York. They did catch the shooter, or alleged shooter. So, anyone else topic? 619-768-2945. Now, I'm looking up here also. Chicago, Illinois uprising in 1966. 1,200 National Guardsmen are released from duty to calm. Returns to the ASCOM returns to the west side of Chicago. Let me read this a little bit. In 1966 Chicago, Illinois uprising, also known as the West Side Riot, began on July 12th at the police and African American youth clashed over youth opening fire hydrants and playing in the water. African Americans complained that the police were signaling them out, while in the nearby Italian neighborhood, police did not interfere with the open fire hydrants. An ex-convict named William Young, after attempting to open a fire hydrant, was chased by police officers, Biagio Pinto and James Razzi. As Young ran, he shouted to others in the area that the two policemen were attempting to kill him. An angry crowd of approximately 200 people surrounded both officers and demanded that they release Young. Panapinto and Rizzi did, and escaped, but the crowd began to loot nearby stores. The violence escalated from there, and by the end of the evening, 24 African-American youth were arrested, and many people, including a number of police officers, were injured. Initially, Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley dismissed the previous day's events as mild incidents, but that evening, around 200 African-American youth began looting and fighting with the police. Daley ordered 400 police officers to the neighborhood. In response, rioters threw Molotov cocktails and engaged in shootouts with police. Press labeled the riot as a battle between African-Americans and the police. That night, 20 people were arrested and as many were injured. On July 14th, which was day three of the riot, six policemen were shot along with an undetermined number of civilians. By midnight, at least 118 people had been arrested by police, armed themselves with machine guns, shotguns, rifles, and tear gas. The Chicago Transit Authority was forced to shut down L trains on the west side as snipers fired at random targets from rooftops. Police also claimed that a mysterious paramilitary group of African Americans were planning to wage guerrilla warfare in the streets and arrested 21 alleged members of this group. Okay, well, let's see about Martin Luther King. I'm skipping down. Martin Luther King Jr., who was in Chicago for a civil rights demonstration a few days earlier, was critical of the city officials and police for the escalation of the violence and blamed socioeconomic problems as causes for the uprising. In 1964, one in three people in Chicago were African American, while unemployment among African Americans was three times that of white Chicagoans, and African American income was 40% less than white Chicagoans. Daley and other city officials blamed juvenile delinquents for starting the trouble. Okay, 619-768-2945, if you guys want to comment on any of that, including Black Wall Street reparations, which is not based on slavery at all. Although I don't know why they held that meeting. I mean, why would Tulsa race riot victims or survivors, why would they go to a hearing in Washington, D.C. on reparations? It seems like the city council of Tulsa, Oklahoma, that would be the place to hold that type of meeting, if at all, because I think it's a civil case. But they would have to identify the people who injured them back in 1921. They might not be alive now. Okay, 314, your mic is open.
Damn, 1921. What about 1967? You read that, Mr.
Not
David?
Yet.
Read that one real quick. Black business is destroyed by blacks. And come down and look at this picture.
Yeah. I think I read part of that. I read that.
No, you didn't read that. You read the one before that. The one I just sent you where it shows the pictures of the National Guard.
This is the story by blacks. Race troubles, 109.
Scroll down and tell me what you see. You see two National Guardsmen sitting down in a doorway. Tell me when you get to that picture.
All right. That's one guard. It's still opening up. Okay, scroll down.
The second picture, revisiting. revisiting is the 1967 race riot. You see that picture?
All right, I see the first picture. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm there. Yeah, they're sitting in the doorway.
See two nationals in a doorway. Now, what's written on the door?
Soul Sister.
You got two white National Guardsmen protecting a black business. Two white National Guardsmen protecting a black business. You know how you know it's black? Because they wrote Soul Sister on there. A soul brother.
To prevent
the black
rider.
Wait a minute. Yeah, to prevent black riders
from riding.
It is a black
beauty shop.
Black business.
Right.
Absolutely. You got two things going on there. And one thing, it's racist. Because, hey, don't tear up our stuff. Go tear up the white people's stuff. I mean, is that what you see, too?
Yeah.
Because if it was a white business and they said, white nationalists, don't tear up our stuff. Go tear up the black businesses. Then they would say it was racist. Well, when blacks do it, is it not racist, too?
They don't call it that, though.
No, they don't call it that. Look at all the black businesses that was destroyed by blacks in Ferguson. Who's going to pay reparations for them? And we talking about, what, 7 years, 8 years ago? 14, 22?
Yeah, it hadn't been that long, but I remember it, when that was going on. And I remember 68 when King got shot, like I see in D.C.
I remember 68, too. Listen, I can name you some black businesses that got destroyed. One Nigerian had a pharmacy right there on the corner of West Florida and Chambers Road, Airport Road.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's Chambers Road. A Nigerian, Rail Bar, right next to Dobbs Tire. All those places got destroyed. And read the description. Then read this one here of all the cities that was black. You got in Nashville, Tennessee, April 8th to 10th, Negro college students riot three successive nights. Louisville, Kentucky, Negro demonstration for open houses drew harassment, start tearing up stuff. You even got a case down here in Maryland where Rap Brown incited a riot. So who do we seek reparations for on all this stuff? I mean, just look at them. 107 different cities.
Yeah, I'm looking at them now. Nashville, Tennessee, Louisville, Kentucky, Cleveland, Ohio. Well, let me, Cleveland, April 16th, Negro youth smashed windows and looted stores in the whole area. That's H-O-U-G-H, area seen in the 1966 rioting. Maslin, Ohio, a battle between Negro and white teenagers caused 17 arrests.
Cairo, Illinois. And you know what's going on in Cairo now? It's still today. Is in a state of condemnation. You know why? Because the whites that was ran out, they ain't going back. They left it to blacks to build up their own stuff. Guess what? Blacks left, they ain't going back neither. If this stuff didn't happen, you couldn't talk about it now, could you? Unless you just gonna make up some fairy tale.
Well, there's quite a bit here.
And then you talk about Tulsa, that was Creek Indian land. Blacks coming out of slavery, where did they have the money to build that kind of stuff? I thought they didn't get paid during slavery. They didn't have nothing to pass down to future generation. I thought that was the thing of the story. And another thing, if it was private citizens that done the rioting, the statute of limitation is up on charging somebody for that. Plus, they did. How is it the city? Did not the city,
well,
did not
the
state send the National Guard the next day?
I'm saying that at best it was a private citizen's, a civil case, which is private citizens.
So how is the federal government responsible for that?
I don't know why they're in D.C.
The state would have to ask the federal government to come in on cases like that. You remember Katrina?
Yeah.
You remember Katrina?
Yeah.
In New Orleans. Well, not only New Orleans, Louisiana. The state governor would have to ask George Bush Jr. to send in help. They just can't go walking up in there.
And to my knowledge, the federal government was not called in to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
No, they called in their state, like here in Chicago on this picture right here. Those are Illinois National Guard. Remember, Gale Sayers is shown in his uniform because he was in the Guard during that time? You ever seen him posing?
I haven't seen that picture, but I'm familiar with who Gale Sayers was.
So you talk about this lady here. Now, if Tulsa want to get a woman money, that's the people of Tulsa's money that they're giving away. But I seen Sheila Jackson Lee there, and she talking about using these instances in other cities. Yeah, come on with it. Come on with it. Because I know black businesses that got destroyed in first, and others too.
Now, you bring up a good point. The black businesses that have been destroyed by blacks, who's going to pay them? They usually have to take a loss. They have to take a L.
You remember the one guy in Chicago?
The city's not responsible for that, though.
Wait a minute. You remember the one guy, I think it was in Chicago, that took his last dime, nickels and dimes, to turn a building into a restaurant? He didn't have any insurance. Right? You remember that story? He didn't have any insurance.
Okay.
They came in and burned the place. He didn't have any insurance because he figured, well, you know, maybe I can get things done so we can get up on our feet and start running. They can't burn that man's place down. These people are savages. Burned the man's place down. In Ferguson, a woman had a cupcake shop. They burned her place down. And you can't talk about
those. Or anywhere listening, there's a saying, you probably know the answer to this. What's the difference between black folks and Arabs?
Arabs are, what do you mean, what's the difference? Arabs is specifically a language. There's no nation called Arab
well,
man.
There's a nation
called black man.
Arabs don't tear up their neighborhood. They'll tear up somebody else's neighborhood. Black folks, we tear up our own neighborhoods. That's the
I don't know about that.
But, as you say, not all blacks are alike.
Hey, during Mike Brown's ride, you had blacks go out into Ferguson, which was all white. Now Ferguson is the seventh richest black community because blacks fleeing Negroes in Ferguson and all that crazy stuff. They fled to Florence. The ones well-to-be. Now Florence, Missouri, look it up. You ain't got to believe me. The richest black community. Florence, Missouri, last time it was recorded, it was number 7.
I had a friend of mine in college was from Florence, and white dude. Larry Cunningham. Let's see.
So this is a whole bunch of malarkey. Statute of limitations don't last forever. Statute of limitations on civil distress and things of that nature don't last forever. The only thing that lasts forever is murder.
Well, that's why they have a statute of limitations.
That's like the individual that was trying to sue the railroads and insurance companies in that reparation suit. It worked its way, started out in California as a class action, and Judge Posner took it out of the class, and then they brought it came all the way over to, I think, the 6th Circuit of Appeal. I can't think of I may be wrong. I think it was heard in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge asked some questions. One, they pleaded to try to get the statute of limitation extended. Well, the statute of limitation had it worked out, talking about when blacks didn't have access to the courts. But that's not true. They did. They had access to the courts with the Scottsboro 9 case.
Well,
the NAACP had access to the courts, but they refused to take the case, and it was taken home by the Communist Party, the USA. So, like I said, if the city of Tulsa want to give some people, that's their business. The federal government ain't got no business.
Well, the mayor
no
of Tulsa, the mayor, the current mayor, well, at least the mayor last year, did not want, he doesn't think that the current citizens of
that's a different government today. It's not the government of yesterday.
Exactly.
Then you're taking the black
that.
Folks.
Right. And I
you got blacks that live in that city. It had nothing to do with that. Now they're taking money from black folks. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
He doesn't, you know, he's not going to fight for it. And I don't believe they should take it either. I said if anybody deserves reparations, and I said with an if, it'll be those three people living. And
yeah,
I don't
but,
know if they're
you
living
know,
now because they were 107. There would be 108,
yeah.
106, and 101 right now.
Yeah, but let
those,
me ask you a question.
Three.
Why would? Yeah, but L.A., let me ask you a question. Why would they deserve reparations? Let's eliminate the federal government. You agree the federal government had nothing to do with it, right?
Oh, yeah, federal government had nothing to do with it.
All right. Now, the state did send in the National Guard the next day. What were they supposed to do? Send in on rumors?
I don't believe the state's responsible.
Okay, then how is the city responsible? The city police, once things start kicking off, they did respond.
And I don't believe the city.
Unless
somebody can pull out some evidence I don't know about. I'm looking at the Tulsa Race Riots as a civil case.
A lot of those riders came out of what state, L.A.? They came out of Arkansas. So now should Arkansas pay? That's what I say. People hear things, and, oh, man, it is just they go by emotions and make these asserted concerns. The riders, a lot of them came out of Arkansas. They had to. They wasn't living in Tulsa.
Well, right, hold on, Pianca. Let's take another
too.
Caller here. Go ahead, I'm listening before I go to the next caller. We'll be back to you. Hold on. 410 area code. Your mic is open.
Hotel Brother L.A., could you mute my friend's phone, please?
You have the floor, sir.
Oh, Lord have mercy. You know what, Brother L.A.?
What is it?
It would be laughable if it weren't so sad to hear this discussion. I mean, it just... You know, it's pitiful.
Now, we're restricting this just to Tulsa now.
Yes. It's pitiful. Let me read you something John Adams said before I get into it. Because, see, you know, the brother said something that was very, very key to this discussion. See, we go on emotion. And we don't delve into the facts. And John Adams said, facts are stubborn things, and whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations or the dictates of our passion, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence. Now, with that being said, you said, and I think my buddy said, that, you know, the federal government shouldn't be responsible for what happened in Tulsa. If I heard you guys right.
I did say that.
And he said it too.
He said it too.
And the thing is, there's a precedent for that. Something happened in a municipality, in a state, and guess what? The federal government gave reparations to the people that was harmed, reparations. Now that happened. So a precedence has been set. And you know that because I sent you the information a couple of years back, and I sent you the information over the weekend. So a precedent has been set. And the thing is, 11 Italian immigrants was hanged, was lynched in New Orleans, Louisiana. And the thing is, in 1892, the federal government gave each one of their descendants $25,000 back in that day. Now, if you use today's money, that's a lot of money back. If you take $1,892 and compare it to today's money, that's a lot of money. Now, the thing is,
I'm going to look it up on an inflation calculator.
Say what?
I'm going to look it up on an inflation calculator. See what it'll be worth.
So now, the thing is, those descendants weren't there. They weren't harmed, but they were because their parents or their forefathers or their parents or grandparents at that time was illegally, let me preface that, illegally murdered by the system. So now Louisiana didn't pay those people. New Orleans didn't pay those people. The federal government came in and gave those people that darn money. So now, when it comes to Tulsa, everybody comes up and they don't see where black folk still living deserve to get anything. Hey, statute of limitations. Now, those people came in and asked for this money a long time ago when a whole lot of those people were still living. But see, what's been happening is they've been stonewalling, trying to make sure all of those people die. That way they don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, that's the way they do black. And we black folk go along, get along, color folk, go right along with the bull and try to carry water for this country and the wrong that it has done to our people. And we come up with all kinds of excuses and all types of ringing and wrangling to try and figure out how we can defend white folks not anteing up the money for the wrong that has been done to black folks. So that's why it's so pitiful. Now, the other thing.
Well,
those people,
let me ask you this, Beasley. All right. You got... I don't know if they're still living. Hopefully they still are because she was 107 last year, so she'd be 108 now. Her brother 101 now, and the other one, all three over 100. Okay, now, I clearly stated at the beginning of the podcast that no doubt they all three were injured. But how could, let's say you take their grandchildren or great-grandchildren, how could they be injured? And in a court of law, you would have to prove that you know, two or three generations down the road, how you were injured. And that's why I brought up earlier in this podcast, too. I said, the person that was born on January 1st, 2022 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, how can you prove that they were injured and that they deserve reparations?
Well,
I understand clearly with the three that's still living.
Okay. Answer me this question. Even though it was wrong, how are those Italian families injured? Yeah, they people were murdered, just like those people in Tulsa, people were murdered and property damaged and everything else. How were they injured? They weren't there. They were in another country. But the United States government, federal government, paid them the money. Am I right? I mean, you show me the difference.
I do remember that information. I did read it yesterday, matter of fact. Well, all right. I can answer that question.
Show me the difference.
At least I'm going to show you the difference. Okay.
Yeah, show me the difference.
That piece that I play, the piece that I play at, with the Claude Anderson piece at the beginning of the, practically every podcast, that politically they have gotten together and they've bankrolled people into office to get that legislation and to get those reparations done. Just like the Japanese Americans did, you know, with the concentration camp. They did the political groundwork. And I play that Claude Anderson piece every morning because that, in my opinion, that's why I play it, because on a critical mass, black folk, we have not done that. We have not got, we're expecting the government to give it to us without us bankrolling the system.
I agree. And look, that's not a court matter.
That's the difference.
That's not a court matter, and neither is what we're talking about a court matter. In fact, look, let me go a step further. Callie House, right after the Civil War, petitioned Congress to go in and provide the slaves at that time, fresh out of slavery, to go in and repair these people, repair our ancestors. And she said the taxes that you're taking from cotton, use that to repair these people. At that time, it wouldn't have taken a lot of money to do that. They throwed her behind in jail and got her on some trumped-up charges. So now this thing ain't just happened. I mean, coming up with this thing where the descendants, and look, let me give you this, because, see, you know, most of the time we stay in a box. We don't look outside to see things that really mirrors what black folks are demanding. Right now, the United States government is going in and representing the Jewish Holocaust victims' descendants, trying to get reparations for them because they weren't properly compensated for the damage that was done to them, done to them. And look,
Jewish, a lot of Jewish business people bankroll the system.
I understand.
If we don't bankroll the system, we're not going to get nothing out of the system.
Exactly. I agree with you because, look, you came through with a series of steps that needs to be taken, I guess, what, year or last year. You're right also because the thing is, that's what happens when you have a group of people like us. You have just as many against reparations as you have for. In fact, you have more against it. So it's impossible to get together with black folk to try and properly fund this thing so you can fight it. That's the problem. But now, the United States government right now is over there in Europe on behalf of the Jewish descendants to get reparations for their descendants for the harm that was done to their people over there in Europe right now as we speak. And then we have nerve enough come up and try and use wishy-washy bullshit to try and justify why black folks shouldn't get it here. And
let me give one example. I'm going to attempt to really simplify this. The mayor of Tulsa, Oklahoma, I don't know if I guess he was mayor last year. I'm assuming he's still mayor. The mayor of Tulsa, Oklahoma, does not believe that the current taxpayers of Tulsa should pay any type of reparations to even those three. Now, when he said that, here's the way I'm listening to him. Until black folks bankroll me into office, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to lobby for that. If black folks would have bankrolled him in office and sent him in there with an agenda, his rhetoric would have been different.
I doubt it.
But
I doubt it.
Y'all think so?
Ain't nowhere in the world a white man. All white.
Even if black folks bankrolled him off, I'm talking about seriously bankrolled him in office. Major donors.
I wouldn't give a darn if they gave him $1 billion. He ain't gonna do it because he knows he has to go back and live in a white community. He is not gonna face his brothers and sisters, white brothers and sisters, saying that, look, I legislated on behalf of a bunch of black folks to get money to repair the damage. Ain't no way in the hell he's gonna do it. Now, you can say whatever you want to say, Claude Anderson, but look, all you got to do is look at January the 6th. That's all you got to do to see how this thing works. And look, let me get this here while it's on my mind. See, my boy always come with this stuff. That's white black folks that settled in the Tulsa and Black Wall Street. Those were Creek Indians. Well, those three people you just mentioned, they're still living. They don't call themselves Indians. The man that bought that property to establish Black Wall Street, he wasn't a damn Indian. See, we want to give everybody credit except our own. That Sarah Richter, or what her name was, I don't see anywhere where she said she was a damn Indian. And the government said in legislation, when they gave
you know she was classified as Indian, though.
She was classified, but she never said she was a damn Indian. She never said it. All you got to do is just read her history. And here's the other thing. Oh, here's the other thing. Because, see, we get it twisted. The government said to those Indians, hey, look, we're going to give you this money, but the black slaves that you had is going to have to be classified the same way you classified in order for us to give you this money. It was in legislation. So now that's where this Indian thing came up. And I dare anybody to prove me to be a damn liar. And look, just right here recently, these Indians have already kicked these black folks out. They just passed legislation here, this year? Saying, hey, look, you can't be classified as an Indian. These so-called black folks that say, I'm part Cherokee, I'm part all of this stuff, the Indians say, hey, look, we ain't giving you a damn dime, and you're not classified as an Indian. I don't know if you've seen that legislation or not, but the courts back those Indians up. So now this stuff about, hey, look, you know that land belongs, hell, the whole United States belongs to the Indians, if you want to go that route. But the thing is, nobody wants to give black folks credit on any damn thing. Now, this thing about black folks burning up their neighborhoods and everything. Nobody has said anything. Huh?
During the riots.
Nobody has said anything.
Let me take three riot periods. 68 riots when King was assassinated. The Rodney King, the riots that happened out in Los Angeles when Rodney King was beat down. And, when the verdict came back, not guilty. And then they had the riots out in Los Angeles. And then, what were the ones in Baltimore? Freddie Gray.
Baltimore. Yeah. Hey, look, Brother L.A., the Rodney King riots, those weren't black businesses. That was Korean time, wasn't it? You saw those Koreans shooting at the top of the buildings.
Yeah, a lot of Koreans did get damaged.
Okay. So, look, my thing is this year, when people aren't properly represented and they have no other way of venting their frustrations because, look, you know and I know that most of the time, nobody's going to hear us when we go through the system. They're just going to laugh at us and kick our ass out of there. So the only thing people are going to do is lash out. No, it's not right. I'm going to be the first to say that. No, it's not right. But what other recourse have they been given? I want to hear that answer. No other recourse have been given. Yeah, you're right. Now, the other thing, this Martin Luther King riot.
Yeah, 58 MLK riot, yeah.
That's right. Now, the thing, look, you talked about the Black Business District in D.C. Now, I was there
right,
in
14th Street, 8th Street Northeast. I was like in third grade back then. And I heard they had riots in Baltimore, but I wasn't driving back then, obviously. So I don't know what happened in Baltimore, but
In fact, I'm gonna tie both of them in, especially Baltimore and L.A.
Okay.
A guy in Baltimore. Now, this is out of his mouth. He said that the blacks was riled up and everything, and say a couple of white guys came in and said, let's burn this motherfucker down. And that's when them niggas went wild. But where did those white boys come from? And it was said, and you can look at the record, that in L.A., the majority of the rioters in L.A. were white folk. They came from out of town, and they started looting Korean time. Now, It's in the records. Now I want somebody to go and call me a damn liar. It's in the damn records. Go and get the records. White boys came in that area.
Right. The Rodney King thing. All of the interviews that I remember of store owners for the Rodney King riots, I don't recall any black ones being interviewed. All the ones I remember seeing were all Korean.
Well, there were some white folk that came in town and they gave them a shot at getting some free stuff. So now it's in the records. In fact, you can look at the arrest records. So, I mean,
right.
You know, we need to
now,
do our damn
research. Now, the 58 riots, my mother kept me in. She took me out of school during that until King was entombed. But, and I wasn't out there. Because third grade, so where I was going to go. But that was black folk. Now, you did bring up a point. You did have Jewish businesses in those neighborhoods. But I know 8th Street Northeast, that corridor at the time, those were majority black businesses. 14th Street, I don't know at that time.
And I'm going to give you this from out of a Jew's mouth. He said when those riots started, they gave them a chance to get some insurance money. Now, he told me that.
Mm-hmm.
He said all they did was just come up with some Jewish lightning. It's called acetone. It don't leave a trace. Now, he told me that out of his mouth. So now, who am I to call him a damn liar? He said there was a chance for us to go ahead on and get some money from our insurance coverage. You know they didn't give blacks insurance coverage. But now, a Jewish guy told me that because I talked to people. And I talk to them in a way that I can get information out of them. But let me give you this one because, see, you know, sometimes we don't realize history. And I'm going to give you 2 points. Nobody said anything about them white rioters that used to go in black towns and riot and destroy homes and businesses in those areas back in the 20s and 30s. I sent you some information on those food riots. And the thing is, you know, just like Tulsa, there was a whole lot of evidence of white rioters going into white black neighborhoods and destroying business districts. But, you know, we don't say anything about that because that was a long time ago. But what was those white rioters' excuse? They were savages. And you can go up and down. You can go into history.
Man, well,
Rose
was an example of that.
Well, Chicago, D.C. So, I mean, and look, Nashville, I can go down the line and show you where white riders, in Chicago, where white riders were going in the black neighborhoods destroying businesses and homes because, look, they didn't want black folks to get up on the feet. But, you know, we don't talk about that. You know, all we want to do is just lambast and insult and do anything we can to make black folks look bad. So all of that's out there. And let me give you this one. The biggest destroyer of black business districts was the highway system, the freeway system. whenever blacks had, and look, you can find it in D.C. too, wherever there were black business districts, they'd run a highway right through it and destroy homes, and they would destroy businesses. And the thing is, nobody said a damn word about it. Legally, they do it. And the thing is, whenever you want to see where a black business district was in a city or a town, all you got to do is just drive down the freeway. You can find it. But nobody says anything about that because, see, that's structured. That's, what is it called, institutional racism.
Let me ask you this, Beasley. Now, you're in North Carolina. When I used to take trains up from here, Florida, to D.C., I would take Amtrak, and, you know, part of the route would be through North Carolina. I don't know what cities in North Carolina because I forgot their stops. But what I did notice, and just not North Carolina, but for some reason I was more noticeable in North Carolina, a lot of those stops or towns that you would pass through, you would see vacant buildings. You can tell at one time these were like commercial centers, whatever. So the question I'm asking you, so would you think that, or would be a reasonable guess that at one time those were black businesses along those tracks?
I can't attest to it, but I can attest to the freeways running through cities.
Okay.
If you ever drove from D.C. through Richmond.
And I had 95. Yeah, 95.
It ran right through a black district or business district. And on down the line. And look, if you took 43 in Maryland, in Baltimore, and you took 43 into that town, it ran right through a black business district. And look, it ended right in the middle of nowhere. So now there's proof of it. You go down to Atlanta, it's the same thing. So with this being the case, there's different ways that they have destroyed black communities. But see, if you can't think outside the damn box, all you can do is just bring up, hey, you know, black folks destroyed their communities and everything. Yeah, a lot of them. And then you come with this other thing about these white National Guard men guarding that black sister's business. How many black men have died defending this country when they didn't have rights themselves? We defended this democracy, a whole damn nation. And here's the other thing. Let me give you a story. In Jacksonville, North Carolina, and there's other instances where you can find these reports. The Mumford Point Marines was supposed to guard, pull guard duty for the German prisoners of war. And the thing is, they had to eat outside the damn building with substandard food while the German prisoners were sitting in the officers' mess hall eating good stuff with the damn white Marine officers. But the Marines, black Marines, that was guarding them, couldn't do it. So now this thing about, you know, black folk, white folk guarding, you know, black folks' businesses, that's a rare occasion. But just think about all of those black soldiers that didn't have the rights that German soldiers had, or Japanese for that matter. And then he going to throw that shit up in our face. You know, I mean, it's just, it makes you want to, you know, if it weren't so sad, it would be laughable. But all of this stuff that has come down in this conversation, you know, black folks don't deserve to get anything when we get abused. We're supposed to take it and don't say nothing. But those black folks, yeah, they're waiting for them to die because they ain't going to give them nothing. And it has been a precedent set because those Italian immigrants that was lynched in New Orleans in the state of Louisiana, the government paid, the federal government paid their descendants, and they weren't even here. But now when we have people that are supposed to be black citizens going to petition the Congress for the damages that have been done, not only to themselves but to their descendants, all of a sudden we don't deserve shit.
But, Beasley, going back to the Italian example that you gave, all right, because I read that, going back to the Italian. What I'm saying is, if you put enough bankroll into whatever government, okay, you can craft that legislation the way you want and get enough politicians behind you to get it through, okay, which the Italians did. But black folk haven't done that yet. That's all I'm saying.
You're right. You're right. That's a strategy that needs to be done. But look,
right,
I'm going to give you this. You can give McConnell $50 billion right now, and he wouldn't let that legislation go through. Now, he's one of your boys. You know, he's a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't going to let that legislation even hit the damn floor. And if it does, look, you got Kristen Sinema and you got Joe Manchin that would knock the shit down. Even if the Democrats had the majority. So now, you can, yeah, black folks' money don't mean shit in this country when it comes to politics, because they got to go back to their citizenry. And here's the other thing, in that clip.
So are you saying, like you mentioned earlier, even if we gave billions of dollars politically, they have to, white folks, have to go back home to their community. So they're not going. All right.
Well, and look, let me give you this.
That is a possibility.
Look, Brother L.A., if you saw what happened in January 6th to that Capitol, and look, nobody said anything about those savages going in and destroying one of the most sacred places in the country. If we bankroll some politicians and they gave us reparations, you saw what those poor chucks did there in January the 6th. What do you think they would do to this nation? Those poor white folks now. And look, there's more of them than it is the whole population of black folks.
Well, yeah, the matter of fact, I think I've mentioned this on this before, and you guys already know about it. During the Jim Crow era, the majority of blacks who got lynched, not all, but the majority, were wealthy blacks and or prominent blacks. They just couldn't pick anybody.
And black sections of towns that was prominent.
Right.
And sundown towns.
Sundown towns, too. Had Tulsa, that what we call Black Wall Street, had that been a ghetto, none of that would have happened.
Probably not. Because, look, the only reason it happened was because white folks were jealous of the success of those black folks anyway.
Well,
not
from what I've read, and I'm going to try to get Laurel, this guy to descend it on, but the strategy was this, and this is documented. Before they raised the block, they would loot the house first, or dresses, trinkets, anything valuable, money, anything valuable. They would raid the house, loot the houses first. Then after they looted the houses, they would go to the next block and then raise the block that they just came from. That's documented how that was done.
Of course.
So you're absolutely right. These are people that were trying to get on a come up by taking from other people.
And then they burned the whole place down. But now look.
Then they burned the whole thing down.
That didn't just happen in Tulsa. You got Wilmington, and you got a whole lot of towns. All you got to do is go back in history. That's all you got to do. Go back in history and read the history. And look, get out of those. Look, read the white history books, and then go back in history. That's all you got to do. That's why I come and
say, let me throw this at you, all right? Now, at the same time this happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I don't know why, O.W. Gurley, that's the guy that bought the 40 acres and developed it. There were 50 other, all right, Black Wall Street was a neighborhood. It wasn't a town. It was a neighborhood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. In the state of Oklahoma at that time, there were 50 other black municipalities. None of them got touched by racial violence. I visited three of those. I visited Taft, where I got a relationship with people there and some land there and a house there. I've gone to Tallahassee, Oklahoma, and then I've gone to Summit, Oklahoma. All those towns were around when Black Wall Street happened. So what I'm looking at, because to get to Taft, Tallahassee, Oklahoma and Summit, Oklahoma. To this day, I don't know. I don't know how those people found these places, even how to start a township then, because it seems like these places would be kind of they're remote. You can go through Taft and not even know that you went through Taft. It's laid out that kind of way. And back when they built Taft, it was, I mean, they didn't have no roads. I really don't know how they found anyway, but they saw the community. Tallahassee's the same thing, and because that's kind of spread out. And then Summit, Oklahoma, if you go there around, like, from dusk, and if you're walking, you won't find the town. I mean, it's remote. But anyway, those towns have been there for 100 years. So, but I'm just wondering why that guy Gurley would even think about setting up something. The only thing I can think of, people. Tulsa had the people, and people gravitate to cities, at least back then as well as now, for the comfort and convenience. I mean, in Tulsa, in all the cities that I went to, there were agricultural communities at the time they started. Okay. You had people with mules and they were farmers and all that. Whereas in Tulsa, Black Wall Street was basically black professionals. They go to the supermarket to get their, you know, food. They weren't farmers. They weren't going to grow their stuff. That's the only thing, the reason I can think of. Although, from what I understand, Tulsa, Oklahoma at that time was Klan country. But these other 50 towns in Oklahoma, they built those in at least, the three that I went to were out of the way places that if you don't know where they are today, you, like I say, Taft, you pass through Taft, you wouldn't know it.
Brother L.A., I'm quite sure it was his name, O.W. Gurley.
Yeah, that's the guy who bought the 40 acres.
I bet you at the time when he bought that, he didn't imagine that place to grow up the way it did. But as people congregated to buy those properties that he was selling, it evolved into a business district. My thing is, I guess you can buy property anywhere you want to.
Go ahead. I'm gonna wrap up because my thing is this:
when he first bought it, that was just open country.
He was a pioneer.
All of them were pioneers at that time. But the thing is, he was those people were just so successful until it evolved into what Wall Street was. But my thing is this here, Brother L.A., you don't know what kind of pressure those towns was under, but what you're saying shows the ingenuity of our people, which we don't get a lot of credit for. And look, not only was those towns in Oklahoma, but you had black towns all over this country.
About 900 to 1,000 today. In North Carolina, I know they got Princeville and probably another black township that I'm aware of.
They got about 4, 5, 6, about maybe 10.
Okay.
But look, let me give you this. Towson was a black township right outside of Baltimore. You've heard of Towson, haven't you?
I did not know that.
Yes, and there was 30-something
towns. Towson, Maryland, with Towson University, that Towson?
I'm telling you, Towson was a black township, and those white folks ran them clean out of there after they had built it up. There's a black historian, I should have gotten that book. There's about 30-something black towns that was in Maryland at the time. And the thing
is,
Towson...
That happened in Muskogee, Oklahoma also. Because the mayor, when she was mayor, Mayor Davis of Taft, Oklahoma, she took me through a section of Muskogee, Oklahoma, which is like 15, 20 minutes away from Taft, which was all black according to her, and the exact same that you just said, they ran them out of Muskogee.
Well, I'm just showing you how the stuff works. But when you hear people say stuff like I've heard in this conversation, all of a sudden, you know, black folks is the ones that's coming out here and just tearing up shit.
Oh, okay. All right.
And the thing is,
I'm going to put you on hold here. I'm going to take this last caller cause before my laptop runs out of juice. So this is the last caller for today. Oh, if I can open up his mic. 314, you got the last word of the day.
Boy, ain't that something just disgusting. You talk about the 1967 riots, and it tells in each one of those cases, those 100 and some odd riots across the city, it tells you who started that stuff. And then you're going to take it back to World War One and that, where you had blacks like W.E.B. Du Bois and other quote-unquote black leaders that went to General Pershing and begged him to let blacks fight on the first line, on the front line. Did you know that?
Nope.
I can. That's what I'm telling you. These people come in here with these twisted logic. They can't prove anything. Those Italian immigrants in New Orleans killed the sheriff. So they should have been put up in jail. It was a mob that killed the sheriff. And the only reason that the United States government reneged on that was because of the pressure from Italy as other things was going on in the world. It was basically a treaty. This thing with the United States negotiating, helping negotiate with France to give Jewish Holocaust victims reparation has no money coming out of the United States government. That event did not happen on U.S. soil. Am I right?
Yeah.
There's no Jews, and there's no Germans, there's no Jews down the United States soil. In no concentration camp. Why come when these people are talking about this, L.A., you don't start thinking? Ask them to give you some examples. Like they say, well, the blacks built America. That sounds so great, man. It sounds like a brand new pair of shoes. But ask for some details. They can't give it to you. Because it's just not true. It's just not true. And here's another thing. You don't own land in those Indian territories. It's always the land of the people. You can lease it. Just like in Africa. You go to Ghana. You don't own no land you buy there. You lease it. People like yourself, 50 years. Ghanaians, 99 years. So if you were getting land from the creeks, which spread all the way over to Wagner County to the east, where Sarah Reckner came, Sarah Reckner was a Creek Indian. Jake Simmons was a Creek Indian. That's these Negroes today time that look at anything that's not lily white and say, it's black. Ain't one of us. Let them people themselves say, I ain't no black. Where is black land at and all that little crazy mess? I mean, does that make sense?
Well, we haven't discovered black land yet.
I'm still looking for it. And there is not going to be no exclusive. Let me ask you something. Is there a such thing as an exclusive black town in the United States? In other words, whites can't live in it. Arabs can't come in and set up their gasoline station, the convenience store. Is there some place like that that exists, L.A.?
Not the ones I've been in. The black towns that I've been in, they are open for businesses to come in. It's just that the ones I've been in, none have come in, and I'm going to put yet.
You know when those people that's a mayor of those towns, they don't go to these black organizations trying to entice them to come start businesses up in their community. In East St. Louis, you had a store owner, Mr. Moody, came and told you that the black city council go to the Arabs and get them to open up businesses in East St. Louis. They don't go to no black folks.
Well, I know like one of the mayors of, and I'm sure all of the mayors are there, she was interested in getting somebody like the McDonald's to come into Taft, Oklahoma. You know.
She ain't trying to get.
And Taft's only got 350 people. Huh?
She's not trying to get Keisha's soul food restaurant. I mean, would you say?
No. She's the one that McDonald's came out of her mouth.
With your old rag boy that's talking that stuff, let's just be truthful with this. All this stuff sounds good, but when it comes down to reveal the details, it's just not there. I'm sorry. It's just like that, like they talk about powerful black armies. Where in the history? Where? You had some African tribes that won some battles, but they didn't win the war. That's just the way it is. Some African that was brought here was one or two steps out of primitive. I mean, it's saying nothing derogatory. It's how they want to live. They got some that live like that today. That's their business.
Well, the technology of a gun took a lot while to penetrate Africa.
If you look at the homes that was the buildings that was built, even in Wall Street, there wasn't no huts. It was European style homes. Where did they learn that from? Well, they had to learn from a European architect. They wasn't building back home. I mean, think.
Yeah, that was 300 about 300 years removed.
Where in the heck were they building two- and three-story brick homes in any place in Africa other than those when the colonists came in and built? And many of those structures still standing there today. They wasn't building no damn huts, no chalets.
Typically African architecture is basically one story, one level.
They build mud huts out of layer trail dirt. See them all the time. Mud huts. Ain't nothing wrong with them. That's what they want to build out of. Layer trail bricks. That's what they want to build out of. People ain't never been there. Don't know what the hell they looking at. It's just pitiful. And the kids are the lowest scoring of any group in these public government schools. It's just pitiful. So I don't know what to say, but I say this, is that when you look at who tore up what in these riots in these cities and so forth, it was blacks that was doing that. So the Koreans should be seeking reparations from blacks? I mean, what about that? He tore up their buildings. How about the inner city? How about the blacks in Ferguson who had to up and leave
the Koreans?
Their home?
The Koreans, other than insurance, had to take an L.
They took a beating.
Will they reopen their businesses in Los Angeles? I don't know.
Should they seek reparations for blacks? I ain't had nothing to do with that. Right? Did you have anything to do with that?
They're not going to. I very seriously doubt they're going to seek reparations.
I would file some civil suits. All this crime and stuff that's going
now,
on.
If they can identify the people that torched their store, whatever they did to their store. Only thing is, if you can sue somebody, but if they ain't got no money.
Well, you're still holding that suit over their head, right? They always talking about getting reparations. Yeah, put the suit over their head, and if they do get some reparations, you go after the reparations. Isn't that not what they done to O.J. Simpson?
But you know what? That you know, Korean store owners from the L.A. Riots, should they sue the city of Los Angeles, the county of Los Angeles, and the state of California for reparations?
Yeah.
And that's a good question.
Right. They should have came in and shot looters on sight. Don't they do that when you have tornadoes that tear up neighborhoods? The police is standing there, and they would shoot looters on sight. Am I right?
That's food.
They can't
shoot
looters
on
house.
Should the Korean merchants from the Martin King merchants, should they also go to Congress and ask for reparations?
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, but the I'm getting ready to sue somebody here this month who ran his car into a property of mine. Didn't have no insurance and shit. I'm going to sue him. I'm taking him to civil court, and I'm going to sue him. A black man. He's black. In the area, tear up every damn thing up there on Edmund Avenue. And he's supposed to be driving with insurance. He chose not to do that. I'm going to sue his butt. He had one hit my daughter's car and ran. And we had to call him. We was going to do what we had to do. We was going to sue him.
Hit and run.
Because if he gets his reparation like these naysayers want and Sheila Jackson Lee, I'm going after that reparation. I said, is that not what they don't, the Nicole family is doing to O.J. Simpson?
They won in civil court.
Absolutely. If O.J. Simpson
won
the lottery, where some of that money is going. It's going, if not all, to the Nicole family because they won in civil court. It's easy to win. It's quite obvious that you done it. It's quite obvious that you driving without state-required financial responsibility, throwing the responsibility on somebody else. And poor blacks in those communities trying to make it, they catch double whammy. They're trying to make it, then they got to live around the damn food that's knocking their cars all up on the sidewalk. They just got the car so they could go to work. Now they stuck with a car payment, with a car that's towed up, no insurance on it, and can't get to work. So who is the detriment? Who is the terrorist in that case? And we know it happens.
Well, we'll answer those questions, or attempt to answer those questions tomorrow, particularly should Korean merchants sue the city
now, let's ask,
of Los Angeles, the county
victims,
of Los Angeles, the state of California,
well,
the federal government?
Also, should these black victims sue they're black terrorists for the damages and the mayhem that they caused them? That's the question. That's today. That ain't back during the Rodney King. That is today. Should they not file civil suits?
We'll cover that tomorrow, at least attempt to. On that note, we're out of time because my laptop's about to run out of juice. Everyone have a good
rest. Big Mouth always talking from the house.